With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Hi, this is Jason Kebler, and you are listening to Radio Motherboard. We've always sort of called Charlie Brooker's Black Mirror the Motherboard Show, because while we love tech, we're probably a bit more wary of its ability to lean dystopian than your average tech publication. So this week and next, we're going to be talking about the new season of Black Mirror on Netflix. Today, we're going to be talking about the first three episodes, Nosedive, Playtest, and Shut Up and Dance, and we're going to discuss what they say about our culture. Next week, we'll be back talking about the end of the season, San Junipero, Man Against Fire, and Hated in the Nation. This week's episode has spoilers for the first three episodes and some light discussion of the first season episode, 15 Million Merits, so consider yourself warned. All right, let's do it. I've got Brian Merchant, our wayward former senior editor, who is now writing a book about the iPhone. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
And our editor of Terraform, which is our sci-fi section, so he's an appropriate guy to have. I also have Ankita Rao and Nicholas De Leon. Unfortunately, not everyone has seen every episode, so we're going to have people jump in and out, I guess. But should we first not go episode by episode, though, just like I said? And just like generally, do you think that this is a good season of Black Mirror? Like, does it hold up to season one and two?
I think that it does not, unfortunately. I think it's still very good. I just don't think that there was like really like a full episode of this new season that was as good as any of the ones that came before, maybe like one or two, but that's just me.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite shows, and I thought that the concepts in season three were all very good. I don't know that they pulled off anything to the level of success that they did in season one and two or the Christmas special.
Exactly. I feel like we got some of the same like compelling worlds and some of the same sort of like queasy speculation, but I feel like none of them were really like as complete little universes that were as ultimately as effective as anything in the last ones. That's just me, though.
Yeah, what is everyone's favorite episode of this show?
Ever. Ooh. Well, my favorite, I think, is probably the 15 Million Merits, just because I know it's a little, like, relentlessly grim, and maybe at the end it's a little obvious, but I think it's just, like, such a nasty articulation of so many of the different the trends in technology, and like really just it just kind of had the guts to like blow them up into the far future and to make this like whole portrait of a really grim sort of but also sort of tongue-in-cheek and very funny sort of universe. That one, and then I also liked the entire history of you, of course.
Yeah, that's the one everyone always loves. Mine is also 15 Million Merits. I think, like you said, it just talks to so many potential things like techno slavery, pay-as-you-go gaming, like the pursuit of fame.
New from Wraith Babes, the hottest girls in the nastiest situations. So let's...
Resume viewing. What about you guys?
I'm incapable of thinking of anything past last month, so I'm gonna just go with... I actually think the last one I watched, which is the third one on the season three was the most shocking to me and the most like confusing and stayed in my head. So I'm going to go with that for now, just in terms of being intrigued.
So Shut Up and Dance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nicholas?
I mean, I don't want to like jump on the bandwagon, but I did like the Demerits episode because it sort of tapped into like my just complete like disgust with like pop culture in this country. It's just like, ugh. So that really spoke to me. And I also really like Shut Up and Dance a lot, which I guess we'll talk about in a second here. But I think one of my sort of more general sort of observations was like, I remember Black Mirror. I don't know when it came out on Netflix, because I pirated it. It came out in the UK before it came out here in the US. And I remember Joe Rogan was talking about it on his podcast. And he's like, you got to watch this. This is crazy. So when that, I believe it was 2011 or 2012, it was so much more arresting to see. Just remembering that the Prime Minister episode of like, I'd never seen anything like that in television. And I don't know, obviously that kind of feeling goes away as the seasons come out, but it just made so much more of an impact back then than I think this season did to me now.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because in fact, I think, I don't know about you guys, but I've been seeing like a lot of backlash to Black Mirror with this season. Like there's been a lot of like criticism and a lot of complaints about originality or whatever, and I think a lot of it is just that, like, it was this really aggressive, cutting, kind of like in your face, like, technology has all of these like really terrible potential downsides that will just not just sort of make you uncomfortable, but ruin your lives and ruin our lives in the future. And I think that vision wasn't necessarily hadn't been articulated so completely, at least recently, on television or in the media, really, in such a sort of comprehensive package. So seeing that was like really jarring. I remember I watched all the episodes as soon as I could, just downloading them from wherever. So I was like you, I completely agree. So this, it's like, yeah, it's in the bloodstream. The DNA is kind of, you know, filtered out. I don't know if we see Westworld if Black Mirror wasn't a success. I don't know if, you know, there's a lot, it's had its time to sort of like proliferate in pop culture.
Yeah, I think it was very early in this trend of tech might be bad or tech might lead us to dystopia in like very pop culture. I mean, obviously that's been a trend in sci-fi for a while, but Black Mirror really kind of hit the public consciousness as we were like, oh, maybe constant notifications and Silicon Valley, et cetera, is not gonna lead to utopia.
Right. I think it's like a recresting. I think I was just talking about this yesterday with the other Terraform former editor, Claire Evans, but we were just talking about how with Black Mirror, like, it saw this kind of resurgence of all this sort of techno anxiety, because if you look back like two or three decades, then like all the major sci-fi movies, mostly like Terminator 2 and before that like 2001, they're all about technology is this uncontrollable force that's going to kill us. It's either that or like escapism like Star Wars. So but it kind of like went underground for the 90s and a lot of the aughts, when, you know, the tech boom was like really powering a lot of the economy and people really liked a lot of this stuff. This is just an armchair, you know, sort of like diagnosis, but it kind of seems that like, and then it kind of like re-erupted with Black Mirror and all these other, you know, even the new Mad Max and this whole rise of dystopian young adult fiction and everything. So yeah, I think it's tied into all that and this reawakening of like, wait a second, we're giving Facebook all of our data. Google knows everything about us, you know, like all these sort of like reawakening concerns about the success of these tech giants and stuff.
I think it's also like kind of chicken and egg though, in terms of like maybe the reason that this season isn't as shocking is not just because of the fact that we're used to it, but also because we're just like inundated with new technology that is what we're seeing in the show more and more. So like, the more we embrace AI and that, it's just the more that we're going to think these things are not as shocking. And, you know, and maybe they aren't like 4 years ahead anymore. Maybe they're just like a little bit ahead. So.
Right. I think that's a really good point too. Like, yeah, and that'd be a fun thing to look at. I know, Jason, you did like a story a few years ago about like what could actually happen in Black Mirror. You know, like what, how far are we off from this? So like how far have we come since the original Black Mirror episodes aired? Like a lot of these things, you know, machine learning and AI, like you said, have at least, you know, there are like sort of iterations of products on the marketplace. I don't know that Siri is all that much smarter, but there are certain things like the Amazon Echo that definitely make it feel like we're interacting with the technology more than we used to be.
Yeah, one thing I've always thought about Black Mirror is that even with the far off tech that it shows, like say in episode 4, which you can get to, the questions it raises are questions that are relevant today in the development of the technology. So, you know, even if we're not technically living in a dystopian hell where everyone, where power comes from humans pedaling on bikes, we are slaves to, you know, like social media and slaves to our pay as you go, everything right now, sort of. So I think that it raises questions regardless of how far off the tech is. But I agree, I do agree that a lot of these things we're starting to see happen.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely think that the best Black Mirror episodes are the ones that take sort of like an emergent like nation trend in technology and then like blow it up in a way that makes you completely uncomfortable. Like, and the, for me, the in 50 million merits was like, you have to like pay, you have to give some of your capital to turn off the blaring ads. Like, that is such like a horrifying prospect to me. And one
AT&T did that.
Yeah, like, AT&T did that.
They literally, exactly. They actually had to stop maybe a month ago, but yeah, they actually did that.
I know.
Broadband, so that's hilarious.
Yeah, exactly. But like where it's like in literally in your room, in your domicile, where you can't escape it unless you actually expend some of the capital that you've earned. And it's things like that. And we can get into these episodes, but the nosedive episode, which I know not everybody loves, but I think did a really good job of like just kind of like articulating the exaggerated anxiety of sort of just like living in a world where like social capital likes and all these things are just so omnipresent that you can't escape them at a, you know, in your life.
Let's talk about the episodes now, I think. Let's start with Nosedive. That kind of leads into it. We've got Bryce Dallas Howard, who is trying to get her ranking up. She's asked to be maid of honor at her old friend's wedding. And this starts a hellhole of her just like nosediving into like purgatory of downvoting and like one star rankings. So, I mean, everyone says that this is starting to happen now, but how close to home did this one hit you?
This one was so stressful to me. I thought it was like, I have friends who, I don't know. I have a friend who moved to Australia. I probably shouldn't out her, but I'm going to. And she like has a lot less of a social media presence now. And she's a journalist, so she used to be very like online everywhere. And now she says she's like really disturbed by how her life is like less validated, and it's, and also disturbed by the fact that she is disturbed by that. And so this one was really weird to me because I was like, I think people are already like not more than halfway there of like rating, like going by these like weird silent social media ratings all the time. And obviously it's not as in your face as in Nosedive, but it's just, I don't know, that one scared me for all of us.
Yeah, this is something that I think about all the time, multiple times every single day. Every fiber of my being for the last month or so has wanted to delete every social media thing that I have. And I simply can't do it because I need it for my job. I need it to promote stories. I need it to contact sources. I need it to like keep up with the news. And I feel incredibly trapped by it. And so it hit really home for me because they're living in a society in which you cannot escape this ranking system. And we're starting to see that now. Like, I can't get out unless I change careers. And, you know, that I guess that's an option for me, but it's not what I want to do. And I think a lot of people start to feel like that.
Yeah, I think that that was one of the smart things about the episode was that we do meet the one character who has removed herself from the whole sort of regime, and she has to. She's a truck driver, and like really, and is just kind of like repulsive, so repulsive to this like nosediving, spiraling out citizen of the new world that she almost doesn't even get in the car. She'd rather like walk in the rain, completely ruined, than like associate with this non-digital entity. And I think that it was like, it is really good because it kind of poses it as like, it's still like, yeah, it's a choice, but it's a choice that no one can really take. Yeah, like you were just saying, you can't really not have a social media presence, and it's not even just journalism. It's so many different things. You know, any career that has sort of, you know, a public-facing element, which at this point is most of them, really demands a Twitter profile, a LinkedIn profile, you know, even to some extent, some more stuff, Instagram, Snapchat. It is exhausting. And one of the things that I've really sort of tried to enjoy is, while I've been working on this book and like unplugging, is just, I've been trying like not to get into the daily tweet cycle and trying to not look at Facebook all the time, because but it's hard. Like, just like your friend in Australia, Ankita, it's like, oh, well, did I just miss an opportunity? Am I not being able to connect with these sources? Am I falling out of sort of like social currency? It is this new whole like element of stress. And I feel like the episode does a better than anything. Like, ultimately it kind of falls flat for me because the ending really didn't do a lot with its promise, but what it really did well for me was just articulate that sense of anxiety, just amplify it, right? Like this could be the future, and this could be what it would feel like to be dropped into that future and have to live it for a day. And it was kind of like, got under my skin for sure.
Yeah, right after this came out, there was a news story about the Chinese Communist government perhaps doing something similar to this, like ranking its people on a 5-star scale. Like, and I haven't checked the story. I don't know if it's true, but it has gone around and it was reported in like reputable outlets. But this is already happening. If you're an Uber driver, if you're an Airbnb person, you are ranked on a 5-star scale. And if you fall beneath a certain number, you can't use those platforms anymore. And so I think it definitely is speaking to that as well.
eBay, like all sorts of e-commerce sites, like they're just, you won't be able to like sell or buy goods. And I think it is encroaching. There are, was it Microsoft who had that internal sort of, or I know Amazon had one too, where you're like encouraged to constantly rank your peers and your coworkers.
Stack ranking, yes.
Yeah, stack ranking was at the executive level at Microsoft, and then Amazon had it for the entire sort of like office platform. They had an online, in that New York Times expose, they had that, they had software where everybody at every level was encouraged to constantly rank or, you know, complain about or describe experiences with their coworkers, which is really, just felt dystopian, but it felt like, you know, this nosedive episode.
Yeah, Charlie Brooker said that the impetus for this article, or this episode, was People, that app that was going to let you rank people.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of fell flat.
Oh.
It released, but they pivoted after the backlash and stuff.
But there's a couple of similar.
Anyways, did you guys like this episode? Because despite it having a great premise and setting up a great world, I do agree very much with Brian that the end was just, the spiral felt too much. This episode felt too long in the end. And I think that as an episode of television entertainment at the end, I wasn't really along for the ride. Like, she spiraled a bit too far.
Like, way. Like, I don't think that hit home for me at all by the time. Like, obviously you just feel bad for her and you're just like, oh my gosh, just make this stop. But I also just felt like that about myself. I'm like, oh my gosh, let's make this stop, not just empathetically. So yeah, the end of it didn't, actually the only two parts that like I would say were emotionally connective for me, other than just the idea of it, were the interactions with the truck driver, but also like when she went to look at that new house and they were like imagining her with this guy in there and like these really intimate moments, and she just kind of thought it would all go together, like you get everything in one package. Yeah. I think those are the two moments that like I was like, I get it. Like, I get what she's feeling.
There was also that moment.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards?
Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When she was looking for like easy 5-star rankings and she uploaded a picture of her teddy bear from like being a kid, I've done that exact same thing. Like... on Instagram, and there's always that moment when you upload something and you wait, like you send out a tweet and it's like, is anyone gonna respond to this? Is this gonna get any engagement? And they waited for that beat in this episode, and I was like, holy shit, that's the realest thing Black Mirror's ever done.
I also felt the second layer of that being like, when you're putting something that like authentically you online, it almost like cheapens it a little bit. So I also feel that for her is like taking this thing that actually means a lot to her and just being like, 5-star it, please.
The one thing I wanted to add about this, we can move on, is it's interesting to look at sort of the rise of Snapchat, which every sort of like profile of the company and whatever, a lot of that ties into like teens who have like anxiety over not getting enough likes on Instagram or whatever. And here comes Snapchat, where you can see who's viewed it, but you don't, there's not the pressure to get like likes and hearts and all this type of stuff. So it kind of alleviates that social anxiety that comes with like, please like me, please. It kind of does away with that.
Yeah, Snapchat does feel like a lower stakes social media environment, but I feel like it's going to trend the other way because Instagram started like that. And now it's not
right.
Like Snapchat will trend that way, I think.
Well,
but we'll see. So. We'll see.
I feel like the episode ultimately kind of suffered from what like a lot of these episodes do, and what a lot of episodes that find newfound freedom on Netflix to just have like infinite run times. But like almost all of them would have been better to me if they had cut like 5 or 10 minutes, and all of them sort of kind of reach into. I really feel like even my favorite episodes this season, they veer into this like overly explanatory, overly expository sequence that just kind of like holds your hand, where Black Mirror didn't used to do that. In this one, it's a little more elegant, where I feel like it's the truck driver scene where it's like, oh, this is the life. This is how kind of we arrived at this point. But in the other episodes we'll talk about, there are 10 minutes that didn't need to be there that kind of drag things out a little too long and that give us a little too much information that kind of ultimately sort of, you know, kind of dilute the sense and the point of the speculation.
Yeah. Let's talk about playtests. I suspect we'll have a little less to say about it. But did you guys like playtest episode 2?
Here's an interactive augmented reality system.
Like VR?
More like layers on top of reality.
Oh. Okay. What's that?
We call this a mushroom.
Like Mario Brothers?
If you like.
You're qualified to do this, right?
I haven't killed anyone yet.
As a player of like survival horror games and stuff, it was neat, but I don't think, and we've done like a lot of reporting on VR and AR and all this type of stuff. So it was interesting just like as a vocational thing, but as like a Black Mirror episode, I wasn't all too like blown away by it, frankly.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Like I honestly, it kind of felt like one of the it was almost surprising for Black Mirror, like the sort of the virtual reality, are you or are you not in virtual reality, is kind of stale for Black Mirror. And even though it was like shot well and I think effectively built, like the one thing that Black Mirror does well still to this point is like build its world and builds the foreboding, and they each have like kind of a unique DNA. And this one was interesting, even if it was a little slower in the beginning. But like, yeah, ultimately it's like virtual reality horror just from the beginning and to the end, kind of like, I don't know, even all the quote-unquote twists were just kind of like, all right, to me anyways, I don't know.
Yeah, it felt like the only episode Black Mirror's ever done that was a straight horror episode, and I thought through that lens, it was kind of an interesting, not as a Black Mirror episode, but as an entry into like horror, like a horror film. And I was like, oh, this is kind of a cool conceit for like a movie, I guess. I thought it was acted very well. I thought that it was enjoyable to watch. It was scary. I thought it was very scary. But yeah, too many twists. Don't know that it had a whole lot to say about society in general and where we're going. One thing I did like is that it's the only episode, I think, where we got to see sort of behind the curtain of the development of a technology. Whereas in the other episodes, this technology, the new technology sort of fully formed and already out into society, we get to see like the testing aspects of it, I thought, which was interesting, but not like terribly useful as a full episode.
Yeah, I agree.
What'd you think, Ankita?
Yeah, I mean, I guess this one didn't really hit me in any sort of meaningful way. I also thought it was like, it was jumpy for me and sort of like a horror. And then with virtual reality, I think I'm interested in seeing a much deeper version of that. I don't really have anything really specific to say. I don't think I thought about this that much. I think I just like watched it and left it behind.
Yeah, I was truly scared, but it was whatever. It didn't stay with
me.
Oh,
I freaked myself out, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so Shut Up and Dance is probably the most controversial episode of this season, I think, at least in talking to my friends. Like, there are many thoughts about it.
Is that it? What do I do now?
I can't really help you.
What do I have to do?
Just whatever they say. And once you've done that, you're out. They'll let you off.
This one, to me, is very much the spiritual successor to White Bear, which is the cell phone one from season 2, where this woman is getting followed around by a bunch of people videotaping her with cell phones, and she has no idea what the fuck is going on, and neither do we until the very, very end. And so, spoilers here. Spoilers, like, the protagonist is a shitty human, and you didn't know that the whole time, basically.
Yeah, that was exactly like White Bear, where I felt like a deep empathy, and then it got completely turned on its head, and it was very, very stressful, but also very human and very, like, complex, which I think was a good thing.
Yeah, so I didn't enjoy watching this one, and that's usually a compliment for Black Mirror. It's like, it made me cringe and made me think like strong thoughts and stuff. But I thought that this wasn't that great of an episode. The whole time you're just trying to figure out what is this kid's motivation? Like, what is, his name's Kenny, right? I think it's Kenny. Yeah, like, what? Why is he doing this? Like, you know, he was caught masturbating on camera, like, it's not great, but it's not the end of the world. Not enough to rob a bank, not enough to kill someone over. Like, he'd handle this very poorly. And then basically it's like, oh yeah, it turns out he was looking at child porn. Okay, I get it. That's like, I get it.
I don't know about you, but my life's over. This gets out. Fucking over. What'd they get you for?
I just looked at some photos, that's all. I just looked at one photo.
Yeah, yeah, I just looked at pictures too. How young were they? In the pictures? How young? Well, me too.
It's a huge gut punch, but watching, I was just like, what's this dude's deal? Like, why is he doing this? I just, that thought was in my head the whole time, and I was like, I don't really care what he's doing. I just want to know why he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like this, I think that this episode is also sort of evidence of what we were talking about in the last episode, where it ultimately doesn't really have that much of a point. That it was like, it was exciting and stressful to watch for me, but I also feel like every time that you drop, like, your revelation is child porn. It's just like an immediate, like,
that's true. That's a nuclear.
Yeah, it's like a new. Okay, obviously, like, what's the easiest way to get you to hate somebody instantly? Oh, they watch child porn, child pornography, and like it didn't. It felt very transparent to me that it was just a manipulation by the writers that were, and less a comment on anything really, which I guess if you have a comment on this, it's like shitty people who do shitty things and leave a trace online will be the victims of online vigilante justice, which is like, okay, I don't know. I didn't really walk away thinking about much from this episode. And then I just, like, the more I think back about it, I'm like, how old is this kid, right? Like, he's, like, 19 years old, and he's, like, hooked on child porn. Is this niche population, like, a real active menace to society that is, how many, like, sweet 19-year-olds, I don't know. It just didn't feel like it was really saying much about, which, again, is what, like, Black Mirror usually does well. It, like, takes something that's like this universal concern of everybody and then blows it up onto a larger stage. This felt like it took like the larger concern, like, oh, it could be embarrassing if, you know, our private moments get broadcast to the internet, and then like goes like, well, you don't really have to worry about it unless you're a child pornographer, you know? And what Black Mirror usually does is like, and it ends an episode by like rubbing our face in it by saying, okay, this is a concern. But instead of that, this episode ends by sort of we find out that all these people, with the exception of like maybe the guy who is like having a one-off affair on his wife or something, that were like a racist CEO who was, you know, headline worthy. We find out that he's into child porn. Like, it kind of lets us off the hook instead of like making us continue to worry. And the other part is like, I didn't feel like it was that effective, like, because these guys, he's like robbing a bank. I mean, it made you wonder, I guess, but if the premise was that like this kid got caught jerking off and these online tormentors are forcing him to do things, like, I don't know, for me it was never very believable that he would do anything beyond like deliver the cake if we were supposed to believe that they just caught him, you know, masturbating. Like, it wasn't, for me it was like, okay, I guess this next thing's happening, and then in the end it made sense that it was child porn that he was watching, but it also kind of obliterated any sort of nuance that it might, you know, have in terms of a critique.
So I think that the important thing that this brings up, and I think it is a good question for society, and it's not really commented on, you kind of have to pay attention to what's going on, like what's not shown, is that there are a bunch of online vigilantes who go and dole out justice to people who they deem are immoral. And so this episode is entirely plausible today. There's instances of people going on the dark web, setting up child porn honeypots, and then blackmailing people who go to them. Like, that's a thing that happens. We've written about it. And so I think the question is, like, why, like, there's this extrajudicial anonymous justice system that's happening online right now. And do we care about that? Where's the line? And I thought it was interesting that they included that black guy who was like on the motorcycle. They never said what he did, and they never said what the racist CEO and the guy like went to prostitute. I thought their stories were much more interesting because it's like, oh, these things aren't child porn. Like, they're less bad. And so it's like, you know, this guy was cheating on his wife. There's lots of people who would cheat on like people, and doesn't make them a monster. You don't know what's going on. And so I think the idea that like anonymous people can ruin someone's life outside the law is an interesting question.
Yeah, I agree. And I kind of wish again that it was focusing on somebody who we weren't supposed to just believe was a total monster. And I think that there were good things about the episode. There was, and that comment is definitely valid, that online, you know, sort of vigilantism is definitely a real force. But again, like, I don't know, I had a little bit of trouble believing that even those online vigilantes would go to the trouble of, like, constructing this, like, interweaving sort of scavenger hunt of mayhem. But, I mean, I don't know. I guess that's the fiction part, but it didn't ring true to me in a way that a lot of Black Mirror rings true.
Yeah, the only thing I would add is I did largely enjoy the episode, but I think I enjoyed it because of, like, how, like, unsatisfying it was. Like, you're watching the whole episode, you're just stressed out, and at the end comes, and it's this nuclear bomb is like, oh, it was child porn. I don't know how much, like, movie or TV shows that I watch where, like, everything's like a happy ending or everything wraps up in a neat little package, and, oh, okay. This, it was just, like, so, like, just bleak. You just come, yeah, just so bleak and just so, like, oh, that was kind of dumb. I can't believe I just, like, that feeling of, like, uncertain, like, what did I just watch and why did I spend an hour watching that? There's no real point to this. That whole, like confusion, I don't get enough of that in kind of the mainstream media, and I really got a kick out of, like, how, like, confused I was by the end of it. Just that feeling, you know, not nothing about the commentary of the episode itself, but, like, that feeling of, like, what the heck did I just watch? I really got a kick out of, personally.
Yeah, it's a feeling that you don't get very much. I agree. I mean, this episode has sort of stuck with me, even though I didn't like it that much, but it was...
Yeah, I'll kind of say, like, it was like White Bear. I also feel like White Bear was a little over the top cruel too, but I feel like it was like it got away with it a little bit because of the sheer novelty of the mechanism that it was describing.
Yeah, this is the same mechanism, exact same mechanism.
Except the curtain's never lifted, and we never see who's sort of motivating the hunt or why they're doing it. We see that in White Bear at the very end, we see that it's like, you know, it's people who have this, like, morbid, you know, Schadenfreude out of, you know, participating in the horror, and are feeding it, and then are maybe implicated a little bit themselves in perpetuating the horror. In this, it's just kind of like anonymous, you know, it's like 4chan trolls with unknown motives are, you know, leading this whole thing, and also just kind of, there was room for maybe a comment there that it didn't venture.
Yeah, do you still love the episode on Kida?
I mean, out of this season, yeah.
Yeah. I still like the show. Like, we're kind of shitting on it, but I love the show. I think it raises a lot of important questions, and, you know, it just hasn't stuck the landing as it has in the past for a lot of episodes.
That's a totally fair. Yeah, you're critical with the things that you love, and I really think that it is a great, and I think it's an important, and it's an important arena in general to have somebody that will aggressively critique this area in a way that's, like, visceral and, like, drags your gut into it and, you know, makes it so you can't look away. I think that's really important. So I think we're just being hard on it because we, you know, we want it to continue to do that and to be good.
And because when it's good, it's one of the best shows ever made.
Yeah, probably. I think some of the best, like, thing, you know, dramatic fictions, some of the best speculative fictions I've ever seen are, you know, a handful of these Black Mirror episodes, and that's, you know, that's no small feat, obviously.
Radio Motherboard is a production of Vice Media and, of course, Motherboard. We were edited this week by Tim Barnes. Thank you so much to Brian, Ankita, and Nicholas, and I am Jason Kebler. We'll be back next week with the second half of Season 3 of Black Mirror. And please tell your friends about us. You can subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, see you next week.
One-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.